Well, we've encountered this particular group of texts before. I mean, this is liturgical year B, and we've talked about them in the past, and we've always spoken about them from the perspective of sheep. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's obviously about sheep and shepherds. It's not such a bad thing for us to be reminded now and then how much like sheep we are and talk about the similarities we have between what we think, us, the pinnacle of creation, and sheep, not so far up on that mountain of brilliance. But as I was going through these texts this year, something struck me in a new way. And we're talking primarily about three of the four. Not so much the Acts reading, although there's obviously good things there for us, but more the Psalm and the two writings by John. And in Psalm 23, we have the great shepherd describing what it's like for sheep who follow the great shepherd. And we have this idea of what it can be like. And that's a good thing. It's good for us to know what we're moving towards. It gives us hope when we're not there to know that, what we're currently encountering isn't the final word, as it were. Psalm 23 is used to bring comfort to people in, so many ways. That's why it's frequently read at funerals. We have this sense that when this life is done, that's the kind of peacefulness that we will eventually enjoy. A certain measure now, but certainly in perfection at the end of all things. And then we look at our gospel reading, taking them slightly out of sequence. And Christ is a shepherd and describes himself as not just any shepherd, but the good shepherd. And then goes on to say this is what a good shepherd looks like. A good shepherd is willing to lay their life down for the sheep. Which says something fairly significant about what it means to be a shepherd, willing to put yourself between sheep and a wolf. Most of us haven't encountered a wolf in any meaningful way. I haven't seen one with my own two eyes for decades. I barely see a coyote that I'd have to stand between. But Jesus says this is what it means to be a shepherd. Not a hired person who's just in it for the money, but a shepherd is someone who has said, this is what I am. This is a reflection or an expression, more the point, of who I actually am, someone who takes care of sheep. And if a wolf comes, I'm going to prevent them from doing anything to the sheep, even at the cost of my own life. And then Jesus goes on to talk about what this might mean. I especially like the part, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about it, but I especially like the part where he says, I've got sheep that you don't even know about. They're in a different sheep pen, which generally is interpreted to mean us. So I'm pretty happy about that. We get in as these other sheep, and then we all make one big flock together. But what pulled this all together and pulled it together for me in a new way was our First John reading. And I must confess that generally speaking, when I come across 1 John 3:16, what I notice is the interesting coincidence, and it's nothing more than a coincidence. Don't read any kind of grand plan into this, of course, but 1 John 3:16 begins with, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. And John, not 1 John, but the Gospel of John 3:16, of course, is about that as well. And so I think I've spent more time, as I've been reading along, pondering this particular coincidence than perhaps what the text actually says and what it might have for us. But as I was going through them this week, and as I was thinking about what this might mean, it was the second sentence, or the second part of that verse, that really grabbed me. And we ought to lay down our lives for our sisters and brothers. And when I read it in connection with the rest of the texts, and I read it, Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, I thought that was the great shepherd laying down his life for us. And we're supposed to be willing to lay down our lives for each other. That, wait a second. If I remember my logic correctly, syllogism or whatever it might possibly be called, that means we're all kind of shepherds. And that's where the sermon title comes from, Shepherds All. In other years, we've talked about these texts from the perspective of us as sheep and God as shepherd, Christ as shepherd. And it struck me this year that there's some value to us thinking of ourselves as shepherds, in the same way that Jesus was. Now, we may think that this is an exhortation for us to figure out some way that we can die for our friends, but I don't think that's the case. If nothing else, Jesus as a shepherd willing to give his life and subsequently doing so isn't the only image we have for Jesus. And what I find interesting is reading further along in John's letter, after he says, and we ought to lay down our lives for our sisters and brothers, he says, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in him? And I think when we connect those two, we realize that loving people, being in community with each other, doesn't mean that we begin and end the sort of the signal or the symbol of that relationship with a willingness to die, and that's it. That, you know, if you're about to be attacked by a wolf, I will step in front of you. Because that just doesn't happen very often. To sort of put it into a more urban context, we very seldom have to dive in front of a moving car to push one of our fellow congregants out of the way and give up our life for them. So there's obviously more to it than that. And that's why John continues. And he says, if we see people we're in community with, if we see sisters and brothers, and I think we can expand it even beyond that, to people who don't have enough when we have enough and more than enough, then there's something wrong. There's something amiss with us. And so if we continue our reductive sense and we expand our expressions of love for each other beyond just giving up our lives into just giving each other things and leave it at that, I think we've still missed the point. Most of us are doing at least okay in the material possession end of things. Very few of us on a regular basis encounter people that we're in close community with who are lacking the necessities of life. So if we're going to be a shepherd and we can't die for these people because, well, they don't need us to, that'd just be silly. And if we can't give people things because they lack the things that we have, well, what do we do as shepherds then? If we want to be shepherds, if we want to live our lives in such a way that we can take on the mantle of being a shepherd, what might that look like? Well, I was thinking about that, and I realized that what Jesus is doing and what John is doing is they're talking about sort of the ultimate that anyone can do. And the ultimate that we can do, of course, is to give up our lives for someone else. And they're saying that not as this is the goal, but that you shouldn't be stopped by anything up to and including the ultimate expression of love for someone else, which is giving your life for them. So what might be on that continuum that perhaps we might struggle with? And I was thinking about this and realized that part of my growing up, and this is just my interpretation on what I was experiencing when I was growing up in churches much different than this one, that occasionally there would be services or at least sermons that were obviously directed at a single person or a single issue in the church. And I frequently had no idea who this person might be or didn't always know what the issue was. So I want to assure you that this is not directed at anyone. I don't have any sense that I need to be preaching to a particular person or that this is something that characterizes this congregation and this is a sermon of rebuke or anything. Not saying I wouldn't deliver such a thing if I felt it was required and the Holy Spirit made it really, really clear. That's not the case. But I was thinking about this and I was thinking, so how do we live our lives in such a way that it's similar to the shepherd willing to stand between a wolf and a sheep? And the thing that struck me, and this will take a bit of discussion, I think, to have it make sense, is language and how we use language. There's a trick of language, I believe it's called reification, where you talk about a particular quality or you talk about an action in such a way that it describes that to the person you're talking about or to yourself in a way that is somehow a totalizing thing that it describes all of it on there. And I'll give you an example or several examples because it took me a while to figure out what this means. And what it is, it's when we do something that we would consider stupid. Say we lock our keys in our car, which, you know, is the kind of thing that's really aggravating. We've all done it, I expect, or something similar to that. And so we lock our keys in the car and we say, I am so stupid because I locked my keys in my car. Or we do something foolish, whatever that might be. There's lots of possibilities that we can probably come up with. And upon reflection, we say, oh, I am such a fool. Do you notice the trick of language in there? This is incredibly powerful when we direct it to ourselves or to someone else. Because what it says is that there's no hint in that statement, I am so stupid. There's no hint in there that I'm anything other than stupid. And so instead of saying, oh, I did such a stupid thing, I locked my keys in my car, I need to phone CAA, or I need to get a handy policeman to open my door, or a car thief, you know, whoever it might be. You know, instead of saying it that way, we tend to apply to ourselves this kind of language. I can talk about this kind of thing for a long time, and you may be wondering why I'm talking about it now. How often in our conversation have we heard the person we're talking to use this kind of language about themselves? The people that you hang around with in church, especially this one, are extremely unlikely to describe you as being stupid and nothing else. But how often do we hear someone applying that to ourselves or to herself or himself? And we can write it off as just a, well, they're just saying that kind of thing. But what if they're not? The problem with language is that it shapes us in ways that we are completely unaware of. That's where all kinds of things like behavior modification therapy works, in that you change what you say to yourself and it changes who you are. Talk therapy is much maligned in some circles. But for some people, it has proved the single best way to lift serious depression is simply reshaping how we talk about ourselves to ourselves. So when we're in conversation with somebody who says things that put them in a category that we know they don't belong in, we know they're not nothing but stupid, we know they're not a fool, we know all these things. But how often have we broken in and said, no, don't say that about yourself. It's not true. Yes, you did something that you wish you wouldn't have, and yes, you did something that maybe we'd all agree is stupid, but we've all done those things, and we're not all nothing but stupid. It's hard to break into a conversation and say that sort of thing, isn't it? It's hard for us to step into someone else's narrative, if you will, and try and change their story in positive ways, because we don't want to be obnoxious. Let's be honest, we don't want to be embarrassed or be embarrassing. But if part of what sets us aside as Christian sisters and brothers is a willingness to lay down our lives for each other, to push one of our fellow members out of the way of a moving car, even if it maybe it puts us in the way of the moving car because, well, we just don't have wolves and things to threaten us much. If we're willing to do that, why is it so hard for us to say, no, I don't think you're stupid. And I don't think you should tell yourself you're stupid either. These are not easy conversations to have. They're not easy to have with our children, with our people we're stuck with for life, like spouses and things. But sometimes we're the people who see this and need to say something about it. And I'm not talking about having some kind of spiritual gift of confrontation or anything like that. I'm talking about realizing that the temporary embarrassment we feel is worth it. The risk that we take that the person that we want to help in this way, the risk that we take that they won't understand and they'll think we're just being nosy or we're just being whatever it might be, that the risk is worth it is a sign of how much we love people. I correct my children and have corrected my children, not because I don't like them. Like everyone else in the world, I don't bother correcting people I don't like. I corrected my children no matter what they might have thought at the moment, because I love them. It's nice that at least some of them have reached that age where they go, oh, now I understand why you did that. Okay, you weren't just being horrible. Although you were. You haven't grown out of the last bit yet. We do that because we love them. And we need to be willing to help people see themselves for the tremendous gift they are to this church and each other and to us when they say things that are going to affect how they think about themselves. Because those things almost never change how I think about people or how you think about people. When somebody tells you something and says, oh, I'm such a fool, you never think, oh, you're right, you are. I hadn't noticed until now. You never think that. Because they're just doing what everybody else in the world does. What you've done probably earlier that day. Something foolish you're a little embarrassed about, and you tend to use language that says, this sums me up. We need to be shepherds to each other. And as Jesus has said, shepherds are willing to do whatever it takes to keep the sheep safe. And yes, a church has a hierarchy. We've got ministers, and we've got interim moderators or moderators, and we have elders who we think are in charge of shepherding and all that. And that's true, but that's in a different category. The sermon title, Shepherds All, is just a little reminder to us that in some ways, we're all shepherds to each other. Because in any interaction, there are some ways where one person is the shepherd and the other is the sheep. But it gets reversed. There are things that you can tell me that I'm completely unaware of about myself, and I need you to. And I can do the same for you, and you need me to. And we need to be willing to take the chance that it might put a very temporary strain on our relationship. We might be a little embarrassed. We might not express ourselves the best way because, well, we just might not. But we need to realize that the people that we love are worth whatever we need to do to keep them safe. And being willing to die for someone means that sometimes you need to be willing to be a little embarrassed. You need to be willing to perhaps say something about something that you've seen for a long time, and then you have to answer the question, why didn't you say anything before? And you have to go through all that. But the outcome is so worth it. People will feel and know themselves to be loved by the people around them because they're being shepherded by people who care for them, just like the shepherd cares for the sheep. Amen.